Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, July the 16th. It's always very exciting for us when we get to talk to our friend, with our friend Leslie Eastman, contributor to Legal Insurrection and just a great friend of our show. And we'll have her on in just a minute. We're going to be talking about the coronavirus. There's a lot of different angles to this virus, political and scientific and so on. So we'll get the rundown from our friend Leslie, who has been writing a great deal about all of this over at Legal Insurrection. I also want to bring up, as part of our conversation, what I think is a totally made-up narrative, and that is this back and forth between Trump and Fauci. Look, I'm sure they have disagreements, and there may be reasons to criticize Fauci. I'm not saying he's perfect, but I think the media is drumming this up in a way that I think is totally unfair to President Trump and probably to Dr. Fauci himself. Now, I would recommend that Dr. Fauci stop doing so many interviews, because I think many of these interviews have nothing to do with the virus, and they have a lot more to do with seeing how they can create some tension between him and President Trump. So hopefully he'll take my advice and be more selective as to who he interviews with. Well, let me say hello to our friend Leslie Eastman. Leslie, it's always an honor and a great pleasure to have you on. Welcome.
Well, Silvio, I'm really happy to be back here today, and thank you for holding down the fort and continuing to put on a show and offer such excellent information and give listeners alternative input on what's happening in the world today. You are a true patriot, sir, and I'm proud to call you friend.
Well, thank you so much. That's very nice. Very nice of you. I know you're a scientific lady, if I could put it that way. Maybe that's not exactly correct, but I know you like science and so on. And this is the anniversary today, Leslie, 1969. So that makes it 51 years today of Apollo 11 taking off to the moon. Were you, as a young girl, interested in the Apollo program and all the space missions and all of that?
Oh, absolutely. I would watch the news programs on the show. I was one of the few kids in my class who could name all the planets. And one of the things I think about regularly is just how much more they know about even our own solar system, much less the galaxy and the universe, since I was a kid. They have made amazing discoveries like the ice moon of Jupiter, the rings around Uranus, the winds of Neptune. I mean, there's so much we know. How geologically active Pluto is. They know so much more in the 50 years since that program. And as you know, my son is now a cadet at the Air Force Academy, and he's in basic training, and he's hoping maybe to eventually become part of Space Force. And one of the items of information I just sent him are more forward motion on the plans for going to the moon in the next couple of years from the Trump administration. So lots of good things to celebrate 50 years ago, lots of good things to look forward to in terms of our space program at this point. So
yeah.
Looking also forward to sharing with you my son's part, hopefully, of that in the next few years.
Great. No, that's absolutely wonderful. And we send our best to Blake. Hopefully he'll listen to the link later and hear his mom talk about all these things. I'm always fascinated that you have so much information about these areas. But you know, my couple of things about the space program. I used to love all the television presentations and just fell in love with it. I think a lot of people did. But the one thing, there is a story about the space program that always struck me as a little sad, and that's the story of Jim Lovell, who was a part of Apollo 8, the first one to go around the moon, and later in Apollo 13, the ill-fated mission. And he, when he was in Apollo 8, he named a mountain range or something on the moon's surface for his wife. And he never got to land on the moon, which I think it's kind of tragic. It's kind of tragic. I mean, he's a great patriot, Jim Lovell. I've seen him on TV many times. Just a great man. But I just think it's kind of a tragic angle to what otherwise is a great story, Leslie.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you know, it is good. It's great that he thought enough of his wife to give her a location on the moon. You know,
yeah.
Hopefully my son will name something on Mars for his mom.
Yes, that we'll call it Mount Leslie. You know, we'll put something up there. But I think it's really cool because he named it after his wife, and I cannot remember his wife's name right now, but he named it after his wife during the Apollo 8 mission when, you know, they were the first ones to go around the moon and make history on Christmas Day, 1968. I think it was December 24th, late in the evening, 1968, when they went around the moon and they read from the book of Genesis. An incredible story. If you just, if you have any of our younger members of the audience have a chance to go back and listen to it, it's available, I think, in YouTube or anywhere else. And you can hear them reading from the book of Genesis all the way from space, and it was really a wonderful moment. So we took off for the moon today, Leslie. We landed on the moon. I guess that would have been the 19th or the 20th. And my only regret, really, about all of this, Leslie, is that we stopped going to the moon. After, I think, Apollo 18, we just shut down the program. And that's sad, really, I think, for those of us who remember it, Leslie.
Well, I think maybe it was it's time, and it looks like they are making that transition to more of a public-private partnership where
yes.
We can done the heavy lifting to get there, but let's see if we can do it smart, and let's see if there's a way to really sustain operations in space in a meaningful way. So I'm looking forward to seeing how, the new Falcon flights and but those series of recyclable launches can go ahead and be implemented in ways that will really help us sustain a meaningful flight program so we aren't having to send our astronauts to Kazakhstan to get a launch from a Russian pad. So let's look, hopefully we'll be bringing home some of the space program and resuming launches and from this country as well. And having a much more robust American presence on an overall plan to get us to the moon and to Mars and to whatever makes sense from a practical point beyond that.
Yeah, I'll just say one more thing and then we'll get into the topics. That I'm sure that if Blake ever had a chance to actually walk into the Apollo 11 capsule or even the Apollo 13 or any of those and actually had a chance to look at it and touch it and so on, that he would realize that he has more technology in his tablet or iPhone than those guys had back then. I mean, it's amazing to me how much more we know now. And those guys were flying up in space and they really didn't have a lot of the technology, Leslie. So they had to do their own piloting, I guess, to conduct those capsules, Leslie.
Yeah, no, it is amazing what pioneers they really were, and how many strides people have made on the ground to help them get into space for the next generation.
Yes. Oh, amazing, amazing. Well, let's talk a little bit about the coronavirus. It's obviously in the news in a lot of different ways. I think there's a little bit of disinformation. I don't know if it's intentional or unintentional or just the way it goes when you're reporting a story. But it seems like, for example, here in Texas, there was all kinds of talk about how bad things were. And you know, they are bad. There's more cases and so on. But the other day, the Dallas Morning News just yesterday put a graph out on the front page indicating that you know, 25% of the hospital beds are available. I mean, and something like only 39% of the ventilators are being used. So on one hand, we hear how bad it is, but then on the other hand, you know, well, it's not maybe not as bad as we think it is. So how do you assess it, Leslie? You write about this all the time, illegal insurrection. How do you, if you could just give us a summary of where we are and just kind of give us your view of all of this, Leslie?
Well, Silvio, I bring you no joy today. I have come to the conclusion that I cannot trust any press report on the coronavirus, and everything that I read is a lie or distortion. And what I have had to take to do in my coverage is to literally go to public health sites from the states or public health sites from the CDC or other hard data sources and begin delving into the information myself. Because the press is writing it and presenting information to generate the most amount of hits, the most amount of clicks, the most amount of concern to, you know, for their own profit, for their own gain. There is no sense in presenting reliable information. It's got to be something that looks sexy on social media and generates even more of an endorphin buzz as people respond to the panic. That is my conclusion based on everything I've seen. And it's not helpful when the decisions of politicians are making are based on politics and not on genuine, shall we, trends in health, trends in actually what we're seeing. And I think the best example I have appears in Legal Insurrection today, my home website, because I discussed the Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt testing positive for the Wuhan coronavirus. And I think this is a classic case of what reality is versus how the press is distorting it. The reality is this is a highly contagious disease that most people will either not have a bad reaction to or have a very mild reaction to. And the recovery rate is north of 99%. So unless you have are elderly or have a significant respiratory precondition, probably it's not going to impact you unless you make a series of unwise decisions like ignore it if you have an extended fever or having trouble breathing and decide not to get medical attention. So that being said, he's tested positive. It's quite obvious he is not being sick or terribly sick. He's got his family isolated, so he's taken the necessary precautions. But the first thing the press does out of the gate is to tie his case to the Trump Tulsa rally, because that was the first public rally that the Trump team had. Because why? Because the other point that the press is trying to link into is that Oklahoma is a robustly reopened state. In other words, masks are optional, most of their businesses are open, and frankly, in my opinion, based on what we know, that probably the most sensible approach, and because I don't think it's wise or necessary to wait for a vaccine at this juncture. Vaccine is going to take a while. They've made great strides, and it looks like there's one in the hopper that looks pretty good, but still it's going to take a while to test and produce. So if it were deadlier, if it hit more vulnerable people, yeah, you could make an argument, but that's not the case for this one. So the press went whole hog on Trump Tulsa rally contributed to this, and the reopening contributed to this. And now they're, of course, as I predicted, reporting quote unquote surges in cases. Well, when we made the compact back in April to shut down the economy to flatten the curve we were flattening were the number of deaths. The curve we were trying to get ahead of is the hospitalizations. so we could figure out what we had because we weren't certain, and we could figure out maybe treatments or methods to prevent the worst of it happening. And now we have a number of different treatments. The hydroxychloroquine is proving effective, the remdesivir. There are new ways of actually administering oxygen to people that seems to be much more effective than the ventilators. So we have a number of different treatment protocols that are working for the more severe patients that seem to the plasma from infected people who got over it quickly, number of different things that are working. So what the press is failing to report, in which I had to go into the Oklahoma website, is the cumulative cases. And when you take a look there, they're saying the number of deaths have jumped by number of deaths. Well, the number of deaths for the day was only 4 for people over the age of 65 or in the health, the high-risk group. And if you take a look at the curve, Oklahoma has a fairly flat, so their curve is entirely flattened, which is what we wanted in early April when we shut down the economy. And so it should be reopened. We should be getting back to normal. And if you take a look at the number of cases versus the number of recoveries, the number of recoveries are totally surging and keeping well paced with the number of recoveries. And there is a very small percentage relative to those recoveries of people who ever need hospitalization, whether it's for a couple of days or a more extensive stay. And what's also interesting about hospitalizations, nowadays they tend to be shorter and people tend to not develop such a severe suite of symptoms. So if you want to look at the news accurately from Oklahoma and the governor's case, the story you would walk away from looking at the actual data is far different than the story is presented.
Yeah, it is remarkable, and you're so right. And of course, you have the advantage of understanding a lot of these different, you know, a lot of this different technical information that most people don't. But I mean, I look at even Florida. There was a story apparently over the last couple of days that the hospitals were completely full, and that didn't turn out to be true. So you do get to a point where you sit there and you say, okay, well, who do I believe? I mean, who is actually leveling with me? I get the impression, Leslie, just watching the news, that there is a real effort here to make Trump look bad. And that is very unfortunate because, as you said, this is a serious virus. It's contagious. And we should be focusing on the health aspects of this and put the politics aside. But, you know, politics is politics, and it's unfortunate, but it is. Now, what about, okay, what if you're 25, 30, 35 years old, in that range, it appears that, you know, the virus is doesn't make, you know, sometimes you don't even know you have it, even though you may be testing positive. But who are the groups? Explain to us, who are the groups, the people who we need to be, if maybe not isolating, we need to be taking care of and keeping an eye on? You know, who are the groups that are most vulnerable to this terrible virus, Leslie?
Well, there's a few components to answer your question. First of all, I strongly suspect this was generated from a Chinese laboratory. Whether it naturally existed or enhanced is immaterial. So when it arrived out, none of us had any immunity to it. There was no antibodies necessarily for this. So one of the reasons for the initial phase was to understand it. And it appears that because nobody's developed antibodies to it, if you are naturally have an immune system that isn't working 100%, you are more vulnerable. And unfortunately, as you age, your immune system isn't as robust. So again, if you are over the age of 65, maybe you want to exercise a little caution, especially if you've fallen out, because as you age, it just your immune system isn't as responsive. But that's one of the issues I have with this, just the entire ceiling off. But our young people going out, as they expose, as people get more exposure, it seems that the herd immunity factor is about 10%, 20%, which means about 20% of the population gets it. There's no real place for that virus to go in the day-to-day world, and it dissipates. Well, we're not, by sealing everybody off, we're not giving the virus a chance to do that for the population that isn't going to get the impacts. And as an additional aside to that, it appears that there's a German study as well as a couple of other studies from Israel and the Netherlands that shows that people, the school kids, are not super spreaders, and kids are not necessarily sickened by this virus. So sending the kids back to school doesn't put undue risk on anybody. And if you're a normal teacher with a normal healthy immune system, in the average age of teachers, you should be able to go out and teach without undue threat to your safety. So schools should be totally reopened. So that's one thing. The other item is if people are naturally concerned about not wanting to be sick, and that's not unreasonable, they find vitamin D tends, that suggested that vitamin D plays a role because inflammation tends to be the one way this kicks in and takes you out. So any way we can reduce inflammation in the system is good, and vitamin D is an excellent way to do that. So some of the higher-risk populations turn out to be people who are chronically ill, again, who can't get outside and do vitamin D. And apparently the African-American community generate vitamin D in quite the same levels as those in other races, simply because of the way melanin works. They tend to be a bit more risk. So supplement with vitamin D. You're worried, go ahead and supplement with vitamin D. And the other thing to note, and this is just again, studies that are just suggestive, indicate blood type may play a role. And if you're type A blood, you tend maybe to have a little bit more of a risk. So just know, learn your blood type and understand that, you know, O seems to be doing better than A. And if you're A, you may want to take the additional precaution again of keeping yourself healthier and getting out in the sun and supplementing with vitamin D. So yeah. there's a number of different factors, but everybody's got to take a personal choice and make a plan that suits them. And I am really skeptical that getting everybody into masks is working at all. And even if it was, our politicians, our public health professionals basically negated that when they were very chill with the protests they allowed to go on without social right. distancing, without masks.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not impressed with sending everybody out with masks and forcing everybody, you know, to socially isolate. Clearly not working. Clearly not working as they promised it would work. And so I think it's time to reopen sensibly, take individual responsibility, and isolate yourself if you actually have your own specific set of vulnerabilities.
Right. Absolutely. Very good, Leslie. We're going to take a little break, and then we'll come back with more of our conversation with Leslie. We want to talk a little bit about Dr. Fauci and some of these protests and whatever impact they had on the virus. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Leslie Eastman, contributor to Legal Insurrection, and always one of the people that we go to for information about the coronavirus. One quick thing that I wanted to say, Leslie, tied into what you just said about the protest and so on. I remember here in Texas at the end of May, let's say around May 25th, May 26th, we had reopened. And we were, I think, getting ready to go from 50 to 75. And all of the reports of the reopening were going quite well. I mean, the things were under control, the hospitals, everything seemed to be going well. And then all of a sudden, there was a big spike in the number of cases in early June, and nobody could really figure out what it was, except that something did happen around June 1st. You had all these people in the streets, and people like me were saying, wait a minute, those people are not wearing a mask. They're not social distancing like you're supposed to in the as part of the reopening. And then all of a sudden, we have a spike in the number of cases. Am I wrong? Was there a connection there between the number of cases and the numbers of people who were protesting, Leslie?
Well, you know, common sense says that you're right, but the press was recently trying to publish a narrative which utilized a study that said that those protests had nothing to do with the spike. And all I can say is, out of vaccine, as the reopenings occurred, you will see an increase in the number of cases. We can never go down. There'll be the number of cases that we experience. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, as long as two things happen: the number of recoveries spike along with it, and the number of deaths continues to go down. And interestingly enough, the number of deaths per cases has dropped to the point that technically it's about ready to fall out of the CDC definition of epidemic because of the substantially reduced rate of fatalities. Now, yeah, all deaths are sad, and you want to prevent that, and it's sad this virus had to break out. But if you take a look at the overall deaths for pneumonia, like in California, which I did, well, we have about 6,300 deaths per year of pneumonia in California. And we are just a titch over that right now, which is a little bit harder and rougher. But if you take a look at the year we had the H1N1, the big swine flu that went through, not much more number of cases, much more number of fatalities, much worse scenario, and we didn't shut down the economy for that. So people, you know, the politicians are utilizing it for the election year, and if the preferred politician had been in the White House instead of Trump, I don't even think it would have gotten to this point.
Right.
It would have been swept under the rug. I think they would have handled the like H1N1, which is when they realized what a big problem it was completely swept under the rug.
Mm-hmm. No question about that, that it would have been handled differently. At least all the negativity,
yes,
I think, would have been a lot different.
Any decision that would have been made would have been the right decision, and there would have been no second guessing. And
exactly.
We
would have been told that we have exactly the right guy in the White House for the problem. You know, that would have been. But, you know, I look at what President Trump has done. I really cannot imagine what anybody else could have done. I suppose there's always, you know, this or that that could have been done different. But I think on balance, you know, he followed the science. I mean, they love to talk about him not following the science. But, you know, who told him to shut down the economy? It was not a politician who told him that. It was basically Dr. Fauci and his team that said, hey, you got to shut down the economy so that we can stop, you know, the virus. So I would argue that he's been pretty steady in all of this. I also agree with you that we have to reopen, and we reopen carefully. And, you know, I can take care of myself. I can wash my hands. I can, you know, have a mask if I choose to. But the idea that you're going to shut everything down is crazy, because that has other consequences. You brought up school, you know, going back to school recently. I mean, having a bunch of kids at home doing school with a computer, that's not an answer either. I don't think they're going to learn.
No, it said setting the kids back, and it's bad for their mental health, and it's again, so many bad decisions, you know, not well thought out about the consequences long term, because, you know, they're making it not based on real data, based on, again, press panic and political theater. And it's not good. And
you're exactly right about
again,
that.
Again, I can't encourage your listeners enough. Ignore the headlines. Go to the public health sites. make plans that suit yourself and try and find the politicians and representatives who will best give you the choices and best allow you to resume life back and normal at this point.
That's all you can do. No, you're right. I've given up pretty much listening to the news because I think a lot of it, as you say, is politically motivated. And it's not telling me, it's not giving me any new information or valuable
information. It's not giving you information you need. It's not keeping you fully informed so you can make your own decision. It's regurgitating propaganda and political points so you are inclined to follow whatever path your politicians and press want you to follow. And so it's become useless, and it's a waste of your time. So tune in to Canto Talk. Find the one or two hosts that offer a more robust analysis, that actually take a look and talk to real doctors looking at real public health data and giving you facts instead of a narrative that it's pushing hard and then forcing people to adopt the narrative, and if they don't adopt the narrative, calling them names and besmirching their character and slurring what they do for a living.
Yeah, what we always tell people to do is check with Leslie at Legal Insurrection, because that's where I go to get my reports on the virus. One last thing. This is a little bit political, not necessarily technical, but the media is obsessed with this narrative that there's a problem between President Trump and Dr. Fauci. Now, maybe there is, and it's not necessarily bad. If there are differences of opinion, I mean, we can have differences of opinion, but it looks to me like Dr. Fauci keeps going on these interviews, and he goes on the interview, and they're not really interested in what he has to say. They just want to know, did you have a fight with President Trump today? Are you and President Trump arguing today? And I think it's not good for you and for me and for the country or for Dr. Fauci or for President Trump. For those kinds of interviews, I mean, they should talk about what's happening with the virus and drop all this other stuff. And again, one last thing, I just think Dr. Fauci puts himself in the middle of those interviews, and he should know better, Leslie.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think Fauci's enjoying his 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah.
I think I myself wouldn't have made the decisions that they did, but I think this has been a plan on the drawing board for pandemic response that they finally got to implement. So it's like a scientific experiment conducted on the national scale. So he's invested in the outcome. I don't know what the personal relationship between the two men is. I find it interesting that Peter Navarro said Fauci was wrong on probably everything Fauci brought up, and Fauci has backtracked on a number of different points. I frankly was furious at Fauci dismissing the hydroxychloroquine, erythromycin, zinc protocol that seems now to be helpful per the Ford study, whereas he's pressing for the remdesivir, and he seemed to be influential and connected to the people who are promoting remdesivir. I smell a little bureaucratic rat. That's my take on it. I have struggled to find alternative sources on the response outside of Fauci. Maybe Trump likes to use him as a foil. I think personally Trump does better when he has a foil against which he works, and that may suit Trump better. I don't know.
Yeah.
I know President Trump is working very hard now to get the recovery, to get the economy open, because that's what he promised, that we would flatten the curve, which we have, and then reopen an economy. And all of a sudden, he's getting pushback on the reopening, which was promised. So I could see where he's upset. And then, on top of that, the layer of civil unrest generated by the BLM protests.
Right.
And I'll give you an interesting point. I think that is directly related to the fact that Joe Biden is the presidential pick on the Democrats. So essentially the Democrats have no leader. So their leader has now become the mob. And that's what I personally think when I look at the other side. That is mob behavior, and that this is all being used as a distraction because the Democrats realize they do not have any leadership except for the mob. And that's not looking really good for the Democrats.
No, I think you're right about that. I think the Democrats would love to have Biden stay in his home and not even debate President Trump, just stay in his home. But you know, Leslie, when over time, when when I've seen different statements by Dr. Fauci, I tend to give him the benefit of the doubt if he makes a mistake. And what I mean by that is this: the fact is that nobody really knew in January and February the scope of this, because this was we can be perfect and second guess everybody in 2020, as they like to say, we could all have 2020 vision and say, well, we should have known this or known that. But the fact is that in January and February, there was a lot of things that we didn't know about this virus. So, for example, when Dr. Fauci said at the end of January in a TV interview that he didn't think this virus was going to be that serious, now in retrospect, he made a mistake. But at the time, that's the information that he had. And I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on a lot of these things and just simply say, look, we were all learning, we're all moving together here, we're all getting new information, and let's just go like that. I mean, we're in this boat together, as they like to say, and let's all work together to fix the problem. But maybe that's a little too much wishful thinking on my part, because I agree with you. I think there is a Democrat Party here who I think has become a national security problem. And the way they're defending our cities and protecting our cities, they're not doing any good. If you're, and I'll just say it this way, if you're Black, Hispanic, or immigrant, and you have a business in many of these Democrat-run cities, they're not protecting you, Leslie. In fact, they're doing the opposite. They're letting criminals run free, as we're seeing in Portland right now, not far from you there in the West Coast, Leslie.
Yeah, no, it's interesting you bring up Portland, because our press no longer is.
Right.
When it became clear, when it became clear that the big BLM protest that had devolved into riots and looting were working against the Democrats, the press's preferred narrative, they shut down all information related to those continuing protests. And again, they are continuing. And because you're Catholic, as am I, I think it'd probably be a good point to note that instead of just Confederate generals, several Catholic churches had their statues of the Virgin Mary desecrated, and one was decapitated recently. So I think that the silence on the continuing protest tells you all you need about how Americans feel. And
right.
I strongly suspect that the scope of American anger will come out in November when we finally are able to vote. And I think there are going to be many dramatic developments, because I think people in those communities, the mask was pulled off and they could see exactly what's at the core of a lot of the administrations in the cities that allowed those protests to go out of control.
Right. No, I agree with you. And you're seeing it, like you say, the media is not showing those videos anymore of cities burning. And I think maybe it's because they're getting a message from the Biden campaign, hey, don't bring that up, because that doesn't help us one bit. Well, Leslie, I want to thank you as always for your time and for the work that you do. And congratulations again on your son, Blake. And we look forward to hearing more about Blake in the future, maybe directly from him
I'm hoping he comes back for extended Christmas holiday vacation, and maybe we can have him on and he can tell you about what's going on at the
Academy. That would be absolutely wonderful. And Blake, if you're listening, the offer is extended to you.
And I will send him this, because I do know he gets he gets his email, so I'll send him the link, and he might be able to to listen to it at some point before then. But, of course, I hope to be a more frequent guest. I apologize for the hiatus. It was kind of crazy here getting my son off to college. But now that he's there, we have an election we need to follow. So
I look forward to talking to you. Yes, I mean, we look forward to any time you want to do it. You know, the invitation is always open. I mean, it's like our attitude with you, Leslie, it's like Ed Sullivan with the Beatles. Anytime you want to come, we'll make a segment for you.
Well, you know, I can at least promise at least once a month, and thank you.
Well, you come anytime you like. Anytime you want to come, you're welcome. And again, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for the great work that you do.
All right. Well, give your wife a squeeze for me. And have a good rest of your day and a great remainder of July. And we'll talk to you
Thank
in
you
August.
So much, Leslie. And happy birthday, by the way. I know it was a few days
All
ago.
All right. Thank
happy
you.
Happy birthday.
All right.
All right. Our friend Leslie Eastman, as we all know her, is a friend of our show and Legal Insurrection and so on. Thank you for listening. And as I said during the show, if you want information about Corona, you check with her post over at Legal Insurrection. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.